The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Teresa Smetzer. Teresa is CIA's Director of Digital Futures in the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation. She recently returned to CIA after spending 14 years in the private sector as a CEO, business strategist, and investor. In her current role, she leverages her expertise from both the public and private sectors by identifying and developing emerging technologies to solve mission challenges. First, Teresa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, Teresa, you have such an interesting background, but let's start at the very beginning. Most of the women that we talk to had some big influence growing up, a person or an event that really kind of inspired them and set them on their way. So who or what was your biggest influence?
So I'm really fortunate. My dad is a college professor of veterinary medicine at Ohio State and then University of Illinois. I'm the oldest of three kids. So I really grew up not understanding that my interest in math and science was atypical. So I always loved math and science, and he encouraged that and never made me feel like that was odd or unusual. And really, it was only until I got to college that I really understood how unusual it was to have such a strong aptitude in math and sciences. And that's where I really realized my dad had made a huge impact on me by just enabling me to be me and also encouraging me in the sciences and math, particularly when I went to high school at a really small rural school in Illinois that didn't have a lot of the curricula that I needed for college prep.
Did you have a hard time going from that small, secluded sort of situation into a college?
I did. I went to University of Illinois in chemical engineering as an undergrad. And fortunately, I had a math teacher in high school who recognized that I was blowing through all the curricula, got me a sort of self-trained calculus course, and then found a community college that would allow me to go as a high schooler. So, you know, going into University of Illinois with kids from Chicago and St. Louis who had way more sort of exposure to sciences and math was a challenge. It took me really a semester or two to sort of get on par and get my sea legs, if you will.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures. Teresa, was there an influence or passion that helped you choose a lifelong career in public service?
You know, ironically, it was an accident. When I first graduated undergrad, I went to a manufacturing job in a semiconductor company in California. And as a process engineer, I quickly figured out that I didn't really enjoy hands-on engineering, couldn't decide what I wanted to do. So on a fluke, I applied as an intelligence analyst in Washington, got the job, and moved to D.C. I never intended to stay in the public sector, but I fell in love with the work and really thrived in that environment and stayed for 17 years the first time.
So how did you find your way in particular to the intelligence community? I mean, that's especially during the time when you and I graduated from college, women were not a high percentage of the population.
So as it turned out, my college boyfriend and first husband was already an employee there, and he was the one that said, "You really should try this. I think you'd like it." And so he encouraged me to apply. And so that really was the whole kind of start of my journey. And he still works there, as do I. And so that really worked out well for me.
So, Teresa, you mentioned that you studied chemical engineering. A lot of chemical engineers go off and work at, you know, a DuPont but how has that transition, how have you been able to transition chemical engineering into the career that you've had?
So the first, I'd say, 6 or 7 years, I did more traditional chemical engineering, essentially building models and reverse engineering things to understand what they were and how they operated. But what I discovered is I had a love for starting new things and understanding how to use data and information technology. And I really migrated at that point more towards the IT, business strategy, business management side of intelligence. And that really set me on the course that the last 20 plus years has been, which is more in the management and leadership and thinking about technology and data and mission and how do you align those. But it really does play off my chemical engineering background in terms of systems view of how do you solve a problem? How do you think about creating an environment where people can use all the data and tools that they have to understand the solutions to a problem?
So, you know, we talk a lot on the show about STEM and how to encourage more young girls in STEM. You mentioned the fact that you were really fortunate because your father sort of made it not weird that you liked math and science, which a lot of people point to as an important aspect of encouraging young girls. But the other thing that we hear a lot is that that girls have a tendency to like to understand the practical applications and what they could use it for, as opposed to just being interested in the technology or the subject for the subject's sake. How important was that to you to understand, or because it sounds like maybe you didn't really understand all the things that you could do with that background? And how do you think we can make that connection more clear to young girls today that might attract them into those kind of careers?
Well, definitely a lot of the mentoring programs that that hook up young girls with folks like me or you all that have an experience and aptitude in math and science. I've always supported women in science and engineering, especially early in my career, to help with that mentoring. I went to graduate school at the University of Texas in chemical engineering, and they have a great program where I've continued to mentor students there and expose them to just the range of things they could do with their background. You know, it's really hard because the system pushes you into sort of a routinized type of approach to your career, when in fact with chemical engineering there's such a broad applicability, or any engineering for that matter, that I really try to encourage kids to think broadly about how they might apply their skills, whether it's to business or medicine or traditional engineering or information technology. But I have to admit, I have four kids, two stepdaughters and two of my own, and three of my kids are girls, and none of them were scientists or mathematically inclined, despite my best efforts. My son is the only one that's a computer scientist and electrical engineer. They've are all successful in their own right, but I, you know, part of it's ingrained, and part of it is having that support system and really giving them opportunities to understand what math and science is all about so that they can explore that as a career field.
Yeah, don't feel bad. Aileen and I both failed with our daughters as well. We each have four children, one daughter, and both of them are in law school. So clearly we have failed.
Well, it's not bad.
It's not terrible. But
I'm very proud of it.
No, and right. My girls are all quite successful too in public relations, communications, English. And so they've got good jobs and they're very happy. They found their passion, which I think is really important. But I always had aspirations of teaching them science and math, and that never really panned out quite so much.
Teresa, in your career, did you have any mentors that helped you along the way?
You know, certainly my math teacher in high school sticks out. But when I came into the agency the first time, I was fortunate, and the senior manager that I worked for recognized my ability to see problem solve and lead informal groups on the particular issues I worked. And he really mentored me, gave me opportunities to demonstrate my aptitude and skill, gave me more opportunities, I think, to really show what I could do, and also help me navigate the politics. It was very unusual to have a young chemical engineer female in that environment. And so he really helped me understand politically what was going on and how to navigate that in a way that was the most beneficial for me professionally.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures in the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation. Coming up, we'll ask Teresa about her early career. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking to Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures in the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation.
So, Teresa, we're going to talk about your early career, and you mentioned your first job, which was something that actually helped you decide you didn't want to do that anymore. But how did you get the first job that you liked?
So, again, it was pretty serendipitous. I ended up applying to CIA for as an intelligence analyst while I figured out what I wanted to do while I grew up. And when I got there, I fell in love with the job and really stayed for 17 years and did a myriad of different types of jobs within the organization the first time that really helped me figure out what I liked, what I didn't like, what my aptitudes were, and where I wanted to grow and learn professionally. And that's one of the huge benefits of public sector work, I think, is you have those opportunities to stay within the same organization and really apply your skills in lots of different ways and show what you can do and figure out what you love.
So, you know, I have a similar story in that it took me a couple of jobs to really figure out. And I think that's pretty common. But for some reason, what I notice with my children and sort of millennials in general is that they have this belief that they have to have the whole future mapped out. And do you have any words of advice or wisdom?
So it's funny. Every time I'm asked to speak, I always get the question, you know, did you have a five-year plan? How did you decide which jobs to take and when to get your graduate degree and what sort of... And I always advise people, don't get fixated on a path. There isn't a path. You just have to be open to new opportunities. You have to figure out what you like and what you don't like, what your aptitudes are. And I, for my own kids and for people I mentor, I tell them, don't go to graduate school right away. Get some work experience. Really figure out what you love and then try to figure out whether an advanced degree really makes sense for you. There isn't a path. If for a while MBAs were all the rage, you had to go get an MBA. Well, I found that doesn't really help you if you're not clear about what you want to do with that degree. So sort of throw out the five-year plan, be more open to opportunities as they present themselves, and really push yourself to stretch what kinds of jobs you pursue professionally that leverage what you've done, but also allow you to grow in new directions.
You had, Teresa, you had such an interesting start with the agency. I read online that you conceptualized and led an effort that aligned fragmented intelligence into a secured web-based collaborative effort. I mean, wow. It was so successful that you won an award because of your contributions towards the mission. You won the CIA's Distinguished Intelligence Medal in 2001. That's huge. So tell us, what was it like working at the agency at that time, especially as a woman?
Well, I think early on in my career, we were in many ways leading industry with the way that we could use data and technology. And so that was very liberating to be able to see the power and potential of how technology and data could be applied to help with our mission. And I just am fortunate in that I have a gift to be able to see what could be and figure out how to align people, build out the sort of stakeholders and the support, and then apply the technology. The downside is that I've occasionally been ahead of my time and the system wasn't really ready to accept that innovation. But I've always found that later people have come back to me and said, boy, that was the right thing. And we did adopt what you said. It just took a while. So I don't know how to explain it other than I'm just a good problem solver. I'm good at translating mission to technology and at working with people to build out a vision and to be able to really align interests towards some end, which I think served me well both in government as well as in industry, where I did a lot of business development, business strategy. I started my own management consulting company, Jasmine Consulting, which I grew and then sold. And so all of that really has aligned around the same skill set, but continuing to apply it in new ways and push myself to do more.
You make it sound like a straight line, but you had some very interesting steps along the way. I also read that after you worked at the agency, you went on to serve at the White House on the Commission on Intelligence Capabilities in the U.S. regarding weapons of mass destruction. I mean, that is definitely another turn. So, tell us about that role. What were your day-to-day activities?
So, for the WMD Commission at the White House, I was a consultant and led the analytic piece of the commission, which really was one of the most earth-changing sort of experiences for me. We worked with all of the national security advisors, including Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski, all the way through the current national security advisors, to really understand intelligence community capabilities and how they'd been applied and what we needed to do differently. And that really then set me up in my company to help in the formation of the DNI, the Directorate of National Intelligence, and in the transformation of analysis and bringing in new capabilities to align intelligence community in new and different ways. So it was really, it was one of those earth-shaking type of experiences that has helped me dramatically through my life.
How can I ask how old you were as you were sitting at the table with Henry Kissinger? I mean, that's just such an amazing story.
I was early 40s. So I had had enough experience to sort of understand the gravity of that opportunity, but was still fairly young in my professional career. I just started my new company and really had was able to then understand the enormity of what the potential was to apply information technology, systems thinking, leveraging data, and applying that in new ways.
So, Teresa, I want to dive in a little bit to the founding of your own company, because after working for the government for 17 years, you left and you decided to start your own consulting firm. So my first question is, it was called JASMA Consulting. So I have to ask, is there a story about that name?
So one of my daughters is particularly creative. And so I said I wanted to start a company, but I didn't want the traditional Smetzer Associates or whatever. And so I had a contest and told the kids I'd pay them $50 for whoever won. And so one of my daughters came up with the name. J is my husband, Joel. A is Allison, my daughter. S is Smetzer, my last name. M is Megan, my stepdaughter. A is Alexander, my son. And H is Heather, my other stepdaughter. So it's a made-up name, JASMA, that really had a certain intrigue and appeal to it. And that's what I selected. And everybody said, well, that's a little weird. It's not a real word. But it worked for us, and it had a lot of name brand recognition.
Absolutely. It's very memorable. So, I'm sure she loved winning the $50 and just winning. But that must have been given her a lot of pride to then, have your company, which went on to a lot of success, have the name that she created.
It did. In fact, she went on to a career in public relations. So she
was
pretty creative. Yeah. So it was kind of ironic.
That is funny. So what led you? I mean, it was an interesting time because it was right at the start of the dot-com bust. And what led you to, it seems to be a very courageous decision to me, to leave the safety and security of a government job and go out and start something on your own?
So I left because one of my kids was having challenges in school, and I was really concerned that I wasn't able to give her everything I needed. While government is incredibly rewarding, it does have some expectation about you being there. And I had a pretty senior level position at that point, which was very demanding. So I went to the private sector, first to a smaller 200 person boutique, high end technical development company that was acquired by General Dynamics. So I became a vice president for General Dynamics IT, business for business development. But I quickly figured out I wanted to start my own company. So, and really ironically, while it was a lot of work, it gave me a lot more flexibility to be with my kids. And it often meant I worked all night long or all weekend long, but I was able to be with my kids and be there for them. So it was really that flexibility, but I always worked back in national security. So that was really the key, is staying connected back to national security somewhere or another.
And then that company was sold that company in 2008. So tell us about that decision.
So it's interesting. We got big enough that I needed to find a place to move the company. We were operating out of my house. And so I found a sublet in Falls Church in a company called LMI, and they're a nonprofit federal government management consulting company. And we moved in, they were great tenants, and they started courting me, saying, we want to buy you, we want to buy you. And I kept saying, no, no, perfectly happy, thank you so much. But then the more I was around them and the more I realized the opportunity and the alignment with my principles and values and what our core competencies were and the opportunity they would it would provide my employees, it just made sense. So I didn't go through the typical M&A process and the whole, you know, lots of lawyers and due diligence. But I think I benefited very well. I then stayed with them for 2 years and helped them grow their program. And I still think they're just a terrific company. So it worked for me. But I do have my own little consulting company and continued to angel invest in other companies, step in to be the CEO for a period of time in one of the tech startups just until we could get the company to the next level. But I really did sort of small business consulting after I sold my company, particularly companies that had technology that thought might be of value to national security, but didn't know how to get into that business area.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures in the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation. Coming up, we'll ask Teresa about digital futures. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures in the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation. So, Teresa, you can just feel your passion about your current job at Digital Futures. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing today.
So I was very honored to be asked to return to government early last year, to lead a startup within government, Digital Futures. And really, it's sort of the amalgamation of everything I've done throughout my career and enabling me to really bring the skills and experiences I have in the private sector as well as in the public sector, understanding the mission, understanding technology, understanding the business community and small startups, to really start this new organization, Digital Futures. So it's a combination of working externally with industry and academia, as well as internally with organizations, as we continue to transform our mission using digital technology. So it's a wonderful opportunity for me, and I'm happy to give back in a way that I really have benefited from over my entire career.
Now, I've run into you both on the West Coast and the East Coast. So are in your role, are you bringing forth new technology and innovative ways for the government to leverage what's happening, let's say, in Silicon Valley?
Yeah. So basically what our mission is to try to accelerate the identification and adoption of industry-leading digital technologies to help our mission. So how can we really much more quickly incubate and leverage existing and emergent technologies to help our mission make decisions about what works and what doesn't work, and then move on. And particularly as technology is so disruptive right now across whether it's Internet of Things or machine learning or blockchain, how do we continue to evolve as technology evolves and applying to our mission? And so I get to interface with a lot of really smart people in industry to help figure out how to bring that back in a way that makes sense.
So this is such a hot area for the government, and procurement and contracting presents such challenges. Do you find that if you find this great technology, you're still not able to get it connected to actual mission objectives because of procurement and contracting challenges?
So I think one of the partners within innovation is acquisitions and thinking about how we can apply some of those same technologies and capabilities to allow us to really innovate in acquisition. And so we do have special requirements that make it a challenge occasionally, but I found that we can work on solutions and approaches that make sense so that we can really leverage what industry is doing. And so I find everybody's really receptive to that in the sense that we've got to move quicker. And so that there are a whole number of elements that are involved in moving more quickly to bring in technology.
So, Teresa, I'm going to shift gears here a bit and kind of go back to talking to something that we tell a lot of younger women and we hear from others, which is how important networking and those sorts of resources are if you're going to, you know, have a successful career in the workforce today. So you clearly have had a successful career both in the public and the private sector. How have you used networking to your advantage or not? And what advice would you give to younger women?
So I have to say I'm naturally an introvert, although obviously I've learned over my career to be more extroverted as needed professionally. One of the things I would recommend is to participate in government industry type alliances. For example, INSA, the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. I was on their board the first 5 years. I really helped to shape their programs to bring government folks in, but also bring in academia and industry to really shape how the alliances across those three domains work to the betterment of government. And so any opportunity a young person has to participate in those sort of government industry alliances is very worthwhile from a networking perspective. The other opportunities are just in whether it's community type opportunities to apply your skills and expertise or with academia, where they have things like Women in Science and Engineering, great opportunity to mentor and engage with academics as well as students. But all of that networking really does pay off in so many ways because opportunities present themselves that you would have never thought might be interesting.
Sometimes it's really just about putting yourself in the right place at the right time, and then opportunities can present themselves.
That's absolutely right. I mean, obviously you have to leverage your skills to apply them to that opportunity, but if you're not out there mixing it up, you don't get the opportunity in the first place.
For folks just starting their careers, just coming out of college, how can they get involved or get jobs with companies or organizations like Digital Futures?
So I think a key is to really find somebody, whether it's a family friend or personal friend or through your academic experience, who has current or former experience in federal government, and see if they can help you, advise you on how best to get your foot in the door. I do this all the time with friends, with family members, with people, random connections through LinkedIn. And that really helps a lot because people have this perception about what government's like. And oftentimes having somebody mentor you that can help you explain what the practical realities are really do allow you to be more successful in applying to the government more generally. And then also, how do you look for opportunities across government, not within one place? So it may be that entering into a department or an organization that you haven't thought about might make more sense as a gateway into other opportunities. So don't get yourself fixed on one particular organization or agency. Sometimes that diversity of experience in the federal sector really plays to your advantage.
Does your organization have internships?
We do have internships. We have internships. We have externships. We have summer student programs. So I'd encourage everybody who's interested to go to the websites, CIA.gov or DNI.gov, and look at the opportunities that are there and apply.
Now, you get to see a lot of cool technology. What do you believe might be the most valuable career or skill set that somebody can have 5 years from now?
Well, clearly anything in data and technology is incredibly valuable. I think we're at the very early stages of understanding data science and data analytics, how that applies to machine learning. So that's a path that I think is going to continue to grow dramatically over the next decade. So much opportunity. We're at such an early stage. The second area I would say is information security. There's just, you know, with all the privacy and security lapses and just the breaches that we've experienced as a country, that's going to be a field that continues to evolve dramatically. And so if you've got the technical abilities to really understand and apply your skills to information security, that's going to be a hot one. I think the other area that's emergent, that's interesting, is blockchain. Not just for cryptocurrency, but also just more generally, how can blockchain be applied? It's a very interesting sort of approach, and I think we're at the early stages of understanding how that might really enable all kinds of things that we haven't envisioned yet.
So, Teresa, you mentioned that you have served as an angel investor in some startup companies. And one of the things that is true of the investment environment today is that women who are trying to start companies that are, you know, looking for fundraising have a much harder time attracting venture capital. And the numbers are just completely lopsided. There's lots of stories out of Silicon Valley. What advice would you have as somebody who has been a seed investor? What advice would you have in particular for women who are looking for some venture backing?
By far and away, I think the best advice is to find a woman who has had that experience and get some advice or mentoring as to how best to go about it. It's a very brutal world, particularly in venture capital, but also in private equity. And so it's definitely true that it's harder for women. So if you can find a woman who has been through it, whether it's angel investing or seed investing or VC or private equity, get their advice on how best to present your ideas, what factors are the most important in terms of a company's willingness to invest in you, and how to then really show that or demonstrate that you've taken that money and turned it into something that's valuable. That, to me, is by far and away the most important. I mean, you'll find the typical male-dominated firms that are very willing to help, but in my experience, I've found that having a woman mentor really does help you understand the subtle and not so subtle ways in which you have to be better than most.
And I think that women tend to be at a disadvantage probably for a bunch of different reasons. But one is that because if there are fewer women CEOs and fewer women who have, had that very, very senior level experience before. So often when they are starting something new, it may not, it may be their first time at trying to get an innovation or an innovative idea off the ground.
Yeah, the other thing I would say is there are a lot of tech incubators out there these days. They're really, really good. And I think that's a great environment for somebody who's interested in a startup to identify a mentor or multiple mentors to help them. That, I think, it's definitely a growing field, the whole tech incubator environment.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures in the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation. Coming up, we'll ask Teresa about how she balances her work and family. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures in the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation.
So, Teresa, we have a lot of younger women who listen, younger people who listen to this show. And I'm always fascinated by people like yourself who've had great success in your career, but you also have a family. And in your case, you mentioned you have a blended family, four children, two of those are your stepchildren. So how did you balance it? You've worked your entire career from the time the children were young. How did you find balance? And I know that that's maybe an overused or elusive word, but how did you manage it, I guess I should say?
I always made it a priority to be there for my kids. And for my two children, I took off 6 months with each kid at a time when that was virtually unheard of. And I just said, this is what I'm doing. I'll pay the price when I come back. But this is just, and amazingly, it worked out just fine. Right. So I think people sometimes let the system drive what they do instead of their own gut instinct as to what their family needs. And so I've worked my tail off, but I also have been there for my kids, and I've made that a priority. I still make that a priority, and my kids are grown. So I think that's a number one. And secondly, I have a good support system. Right? I have fortunate that I've had my husbands both have been very supportive and have been picked up the slack. My current husband cooks and does all the shopping, which is awesome because I don't really cook much. I've got a sister that lives nearby and so can help. And I think so using your support network to make sure that if you can't be there, there's somebody there. And that's really worked out well for me personally. But I've made it a priority and I've set boundaries.
So almost everybody that I talk to who've been through it has some disaster in their life that, you know, the nanny quit in the morning or something like. Can you think of any?
My worst one was I had arranged a new daycare, in-home daycare provider for my kids when they were 2 and 4. And I've done all the due diligence and taken the kids there. Everything was arranged. And the Monday morning, I turned down the street where she lived, and her house literally had burned down the night before. Fortunately, she was fine, but literally, I was stuck with nothing in a place in Virginia where it was not easy to find daycare. I will never forget the anxiety and panic attack, right? So I was able to work something out within a few days. I just took time off until I could figure it out. But that was probably the worst.
That's a crazy story. And, you know, talk about one of those situations where you want to be concerned for the person, but all you can think of is how it affects you to show up to daycare and have the building be burned to the ground.
That's right. So I think what having kids teaches you, and you both know this, is how to be flexible and how to adapt and how not to over plan or schedule, because things just never work out. And so that really helps you professionally as well as personally in managing the whole. Well, another time I was briefing a very, very senior person in government, and his admin came in and said, excuse me, your school just called. Your son's dislocated his hand or finger, and you need to come get him right now. And it was right at the seminal part of a very powerful briefing, and he was great. It was fine, but you know, you just have this horrible anxiety.
Well, I'm going to try to change things around. What interesting stories. When you have kids, you like you said, you have to roll with it.
Right.
But in your role, you've had a chance to see some pretty exciting new companies that may be future disruptors. Any predictions about big shifts like we are seeing with cloud computing or artificial intelligence?
Well, I think artificial intelligence certainly currently has the most promise for being very disruptive and balancing that tension between those who feel that it's really going to rule the world rather than us ruling it, or understanding how it can be applied to lower end types of job functions that enable a higher level of understanding. That's going to be the dilemma with machine learning the next, 4, 5, 6 years. And also understanding the training data that has to be available to tune or manage those implementations. I think we can only begin to imagine the potential implications, whether it's the self-driving cars or whether it's really disintermediating a lot of industries that have been sort of staples of this country. So what's the societal impact? How does that affect not just us, but the world? Those are pretty big questions.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Teresa Smetzer, the CIA's Director of Digital Futures and the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation. So, Teresa, I'm going to ask what's next for you. I know you've got a big job that you're working on, and you're probably not in any hurry to leave it. But what, you know, you've had just such an interesting career path. What do you think is next for you?
So I'm very committed to the job I have. I find it incredibly rewarding. Despite the bureaucratic frustrations occasionally with being in the public sector. And so I'm committed to getting this organization to a point where I feel like I've really added value and demonstrated what's possible for the organization. But I also know myself, I get very antsy, and whether I start another company, whether I collaborate with other folks, whether I go into the investment community, I know I'm going to continue to build on those skills and experience I've had to add value. So it's just a question of, you know, at the point in time where I feel like I've gotten the government position to the maximum potential, then I'll figure out what's next.
And you think whatever you do next will still kind of be something in the realm of helping national security?
Absolutely. I've done that my whole career. And so I know it'll either directly or indirectly relate to the field that I really know and love and my passion, which is to help with national security while also bringing in the technology and the data and the other management leadership things I've done that I also enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many interesting technologies. And I mean, we talked about a couple of them today, right? Artificial intelligence, the cloud. You mentioned blockchain technology as something that's up and coming, the cyber. I mean, there's certainly no end of areas of technology that could be applied to solve real-world government, the problems that the government's facing today.
That's right. And I think it's only going to grow. I think there'll be new things that emerge. I've actually even considered, I've got most of the coursework for a PhD, but I never had the patience to sit and finish. But, you know, I've also thought about teaching at least part-time just because I enjoy it. And I think that would be another way to sort of give back, but also still do other things, consulting or whatever.
And maybe find a way to get back to Texas.
For sure. All four of my kids are in Austin. I love Austin. I went to graduate school there. And so my heart's definitely in Austin, although this job is really intriguing and very rewarding. So I'll get back there at some point.
Teresa, you've had such a successful career. I've enjoyed so much listening to it today. But if you go back in time and you were to see Teresa, you know, graduating that on that stage in University of Illinois, what three pieces of advice would you give her to help her achieve success at the level you have in today's world?
Well, first, I think it would be to don't be overly driven. Take time to smell the roses and look at opportunities around you and participate and enjoy just the day-to-day life. That's number one. The second piece, I think, is to take personal accountability for everything you do. It's not your parents. It's not your supervisor. It's not your company. It's you. And so that's always served me well, to take personal accountability for everything I do. And third, it's to be passionate about whatever you're doing. So find something you love that you feel that you're good at and continue to grow in that. And it makes a world of difference if you can make money, love what you do, and feel like you're making some contribution.
Today in the studio, we've been talking with Teresa Smetzer, CIA's Director of Digital Futures and the newly established Directorate of Digital Innovation.
Thank you so much.
I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.